Hello, welcome to Hull Village. Today is Wednesday, August 16, 2000. In the Coinonia Creekside room this evening are Anita Hill and Jill Bassett. Today's session number is 2000-3 and is titled Claiming Your Promise as Lesbian and Gay Christians, Claiming Our Welcoming Congregations. Let's listen in.
The Reconciling in Christ program of Lutheran Concern. Can you just give me a show of hands about how many people have heard about Reconciling in Christ in the Lutheran context? Okay. this is not the only program in the country. This is the Lutheran version of the Welcoming Church movement, or the Welcoming Church program. Every denomination has a program. For the Methodists, it's the Reconciling Congregation program. For the Baptists, it's Welcoming and Affirming. For UCC, it's Open and Affirming. So every denomination has a program. And what I'll do is I'll just talk about the Reconciling in Christ program because I know the most about that. For 4 years, I was the director of Reconciling in Christ for Lutherans Concerned North America. Lutherans Concerned as an organization began in 1974. And then 1984, that area, they decided to begin a program by which congregations could go through an educational process. And then, this is a little brochure, come to a congregational statement called an affirmation of welcome. There are three pieces of the affirmation of welcome. And what has generally happened is that congregations write, I think this is true in the Methodist Church as well, congregations write their own affirmation of welcome based on this sort of little template. And congregations come up with beautiful statements of welcome to gay and lesbian people. But these are the three things that are kind of the starting points for the Reconciling in Christ program. That gay and lesbian people share with all others the worth that comes from being unique individuals created by God. That gay and lesbian people are welcome within the membership of this congregation, organization, or synod, because we also have Reconciling in Christ synods, and other organizations as well, upon making the same affirmation of faith that all other people make, and that as members of this congregation, organization, or synod, gay and lesbian people are expected and encouraged to share in the sacramental and general life of this congregation, or organization, or synod. So what happens in a congregation, generally speaking, and it's different in every congregation, because every congregation does it their own way, is that a committee or a task force puts together an educational process. Might bring in some videos or use Bible study curriculum that Anita's going to tell you about. Bring in speakers to adult forums on Sunday mornings. Like parents of gay and lesbian people themselves, biblical theologians come in, talk. And then come to a point where, generally speaking, they take a vote. Sometimes it's a congregational council vote, other times it's a congregational vote as a whole. Do they want to adopt this affirmation of welcome? Welcome, by the way, welcome. and then what happens next is they are designated as a Reconciling in Christ congregation, and what my job for the past 4 years was to order a certificate for them and add that congregation's name to our roster of Reconciling in Christ congregations so that people moving into the area could know which congregations are open and welcoming. That is basically the simple process of becoming a Reconciling in Christ congregation. I'm thinking that, some of you actually have been through it or know about that. It's a program that has picked up speed in the last 5 years or so. I was 4 years as the director, so I think in the early years, maybe they had one or two congregations a year, and now we're averaging between 15 and 20 congregations a year that become Reconciling in Christ. And we hope it continues to pick up speed. We're up to 186 at the last count. And our goal is to have 200 congregations by the end of the year 2000.
Which is still a modest goal, considering that in the Lutheran, the ELCA alone, there are 11,000 congregations. So trying to get to 200 is a modest goal.
So I think I'll stop there as a sort of opening, you know, introduction to what reconciling in Christ is in the Lutheran context. Did anybody have a question or comment about that? That's the basic sort of information. Okay, what I want to do next before I end is I want to tell you about a conference that I was just at August 3rd through 6th. Were you there? No.
I have a friend that went.
Okay.
A couple of things.
Okay. This was an historic occasion because for the very first time in history, all of the welcoming church groups got together and had a conference. And it was anointed. The Spirit was moving strong. There were 1,006 participants. 26 different denominations had representatives. And it felt for me like being a woman at the Seneca Falls Convention in 1848. I mean, that's just how it felt. You know, people finally came together and said, we're in a movement, and let's celebrate the movement. The energy was high. The speakers were fantastic. Our speaker was former Bishop Herb Chilstrom, and he was on a panel. Boy, I don't even know exactly how to describe it. I think one of the things that, I hate this because it's a monetary value on something, but the energy was so high that at the closing banquet, one of the planners got up and said, you know, we need to do this again. And we'd like to, we began this process with a $6,000 grant from somebody, and our budget sort of expanded along the way, and we did fundraising along the way. We want to do this again, and we're going to have pledge cards and do the asking for seed money for the next conference. $40,000 was pledged that night from 1,000 people. That's just a illustration of how high the energy was, how supportive and excited people were about being part of the Welcoming Church movement. So it was a wonderful experience, and I think I'll stop at that.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
A lot of times you hear about gays and lesbians that are born from out of a wrong body. I mean, like, for example, if you be born out of, instead of a woman's body, a man's body.
Mm-hmm. Actually, what you're describing when you talk about that is somebody who would describe themselves as transgender, which is not the same thing as sexual orientation, which we're talking about in terms of that.
Okay.
And I can address that for a few minutes. It's not our topic per se, but I can go at that for a few minutes, and you can help me get these past room.
Sure. I was sitting here doing nothing.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. There you are.
Just quickly, let me talk about the things that make up a person's sexual identity. That there are at least five different components that we talk about. The first piece of it has to do with biological sexual assignment, so that a doctor takes a peek and says this is a boy or a girl when their whole body is out. Okay, so it's that kind of biology that has to do with our chromosomal makeup. Generally, it's clear whether looking at biologically whether a male or female is present. Sometimes it's ambiguous if that happens, and that may happen more than we're aware of.
You mean both?
No, sometimes unclear in terms of genitalia.
Okay, but sometimes it's both, isn't it?
Sometimes it could be both as well, but that's a different matter than what I'm trying to address here. So it has to do with chromosomal makeup, and sometimes there's an additional chromosome which would sort of make both. And the both language that talks about that is called being a hermaphrodite. It's the language regarding that. So biology is one piece. Gender is another. And gender has to do with being, this is like boy or girl, or indeterminate. Gender has to do with understanding yourself to be a boy or girl. And generally for people, that matches up in terms of their biological assignment. What you have raised for us is the question about transgender, and that would be when your biological assignment does not match what you feel inside your own gender is to be. Now, another piece of this has to do with gender roles, and gender roles are constructed in a particular society, what the roles are of men and women and how they act out their lives. There are some countries in the world in which the female gender are the hard laborers. Our country has not been organized in that way. So gender role is a constructed piece in some senses. Another piece to do with this has to do with orientation. And often that's been discussed in terms of a continuum from heterosexuality to homosexuality. Currently, in the field of sexology, they're doing a bit more than looking at continuum around that. They're looking at sort of multiple axes to try to look at sexual orientation. But this would include on it heterosexuality, bisexuality, homosexuality, and perhaps asexuality, people who don't feel drawn in any way towards someone in terms of sexual orientation. The last piece has to do with sexual practices. And in the development of a sexual identity, all of these factors and probably more come into play. Now, we are focusing this week on looking at sexual orientation and how culturally people have responded to gay and lesbian individuals or bisexual. Transgender fits on that scheme of things in some ways, and in some ways doesn't. It depends on what that person feels their sexual orientation is after their reassignment in terms of their gender. So if I could let it suffice with that and move on with a little bit of other agenda of all committee congregations, I will do that.
I need to make a quick announcement. If you got a pink sheet that says Alliance at the top, that's the wrong sheet. You should have station 1 through 9. I just saw this in the stack and realized it was the wrong. Anybody have that?
1 through 8.
Stations 1 through, actually 9 is up in the...
It says 1, 9, 2 through 8.
Yes.
Okay, it's confusing.
There we go.
All right. And these 9 stations that you've received in that sheet come from a presentation by Bishop Paul Egertson, who's from Southern California West Synod, and he participated in a conference that our congregation helped host in the Twin Cities in 98. The conference was called Here I Stand, and it was looking at matters of ordination for gay and lesbian people, and he was the keynote speaker there. And in it, he was posing that rather than looking at in terms of welcoming or looking at where the church is, then looking at a dichotomous kind of fashion of either or, saying the church is welcoming or it's not, that there are many different gradations about that. So he's posed a continuum of sorts of these 9 pieces, and he asks us to look at them in such a way that we're not looking at a straight line kind of continuum, but rather a circle that is open, that would have 1 here and 9 in this position, rather near one another, and the others around that. So it's a kind of continuum. And what I'd like to do is just to talk through that quickly, and then we're going to divide into groups and talk a bit about this continuum, perhaps where we see ourselves, where we think our own home congregation is, and where we think our denomination is located in terms of looking at this continuum. Mm-hmm. So let me just do a brief overview about this and describe it. That figuring out where we currently stand may help us figure out where we wish to move to. So that's the approach that we're after here. The first position he's named is what he would call the most firmly closed position. One in which, let's maybe stay in the church realm a bit, that gay people should be excommunicated in the church, not allowed to be part of it, or certainly not allowed the sacraments. At the opposite end of it, the way he posed it was to say, looking at the most open position would be one that looks at entirely at what happens between consenting adults is okay as long as it's in private and behind closed doors. Who needs to know? And the church and society and our government should stay out of that realm. Looking back to the second one, he talks about supporting laws in society. And in terms of looking at church, it would have to do with perhaps doing some sort of transformation, trying to not be gay or lesbian in one's orientation. That would be your entree into church and sometimes how you'd have to have to prove that you had made that transformation, if it's possible, in order to be in leadership of the church in some way.
What an example of that would be the Exodus program.
Absolutely.
Yeah, ex-gay ministry.
The ex-gay movement ran into Station 2.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the third one, he's talking about the church advocating for laws, assuring housing and employment, however they would set aside marrying or parenting, and that the only way someone could serve in a leadership role would be through a vow of celibacy, if one's orientation was gay or lesbian. Now the fourth one is advocating for civil laws. It would also allow domestic partnerships, and we've seen some of that take place in our country now in the state of Vermont, where they have passed the possibility legally for civil unions. And he describes it in terms of the church as a don't ask, don't tell kind of arrangement, where you just would not talk about it. If you talked about it, then you'd probably be removed and not be able to proceed in terms of any kind of leadership. The fifth one he describes as the midpoint. So in the church, it would be a place where we would provide liturgical rites of blessing for such relationships. And I think he describes there as well some other denominations that he sees at that spot, the United Church of Christ, Quakers, Unitarians, Reformed Judaism. The sixth station is one in which the church would make no distinction anymore between persons on the basis of sexual orientation. And he looks at the Metropolitan Community Church, which is a church that began in the late 60s primarily as a church welcoming homes for gay and lesbian people, but welcomes people of all sorts as an example of that. Station 7 would be a place where in the church not only would gay and lesbian people be welcomed, but there would be somehow preferential treatment because they would be seen as people somehow more closely connected to the spiritual, which is true in Native American thoughts, and sometimes individual Christians hold that view, he says. Station 8 he describes as affirming a special set of ethical norms for gay and lesbian people and relationships. And the question for us is to try to look at for ourselves, is there one of those particular stances where we would see ourselves, and then secondly, where would we see our congregation fitting in the midst of that, and then also looking at our denomination. Now, I know that everyone at Holden Village is not Lutheran, so we'll keep it in that denomination realm. Janelle and I come out of the Lutheran tradition, so we're most apt to talk about it and know it at best. But what we're going to suggest is that we divide into two groups, maybe just on the two halves, if you could circle your chairs. Would ask you first to do some private review of this set of nine different positions and come to a place for yourself about where you see yourself. And then we'll begin to engage in conversation about that and about where you think your congregation and denomination are. So let's take just a few minutes on the individual task, then we'll circle chairs and move to the group.
Okay.
We would invite you to circle your chairs and do some sharing about that, and move to the task of trying to look at the congregation.